Hi guys, my name is Guillermo Kopp. We are here to talk about blockchain. Let me introduce you, Mark from Consensys.
Thanks, Guillermo. Hi everyone, Mark D'Agostino. I'm with Consensys. I'm a director in Consensys Enterprise. Basically, we build blockchain decentralized applications, both for the public Ethereum network and also for major financial institutions. I think we are the largest decentralized application studio in the world, and we're happy to be working alongside Microsoft in this new paradigm of computing.
Excellent. We are seeing a fantastic momentum in the financial services industry with blockchain technology, particularly in the agility and speed which Consensys brings to the market with very creative solutions. So, Mark, can you tell us a little bit about how Consensys works?
Give a little background on myself first. I spent 7 years at Deloitte, working in the bank and security space, mainly financial services clients. In the past 2.5 years, starting about 2013, I got into this blockchain paradigm wherein we would develop disruptive and transformative projects for our clients. We would look at different ways that they can either change their own business model or create an entire new business model for exponential growth or to improve some business processes. I started working closely with Consensys in the financial services space for some of their clients. We went to market together. We also go to market now with Microsoft, which is fantastic. And we're trying to deliver this new paradigm of computing technology for our clients. And we're spread out all around the world. We've got about 70 full-time employees across 12 different countries right now. And Microsoft obviously gives us a much larger reach than we'd have on our own.
Thank you, Mark. And by the way, Microsoft brings a platform that is secure and scalable. And interesting, Mark mentions smart contracts, because that's where the intelligence is bringing the most benefit to financial services firms for a number of reasons. Most importantly, it's because it can simplify operational processes, particularly when there are several parties involved in a transaction. So the ability to settle without necessarily an intermediary. Another thing is the security attached, the non-repudiation attached to smart contracts, and the ability of smart contracts to enforce themselves. So I will ask Mark, how do smart contracts work, please?
Sure. So most of the clients, when we talk to them, they know they want to play in this blockchain space. They gravitate towards the idea of smart contracts. Essentially, it's really just executable code at the network level rather than on my own internal servers. So we, in a consortium or a group of different entities, would agree on certain types of transactions, certain types of things we want to happen, and a smart contract can actually process that at the network layer so that no individual can do anything that would be nefarious, can do something that's not agreed upon, things of that nature. So it's a new way of distributing the computational effort and to ensure that all of us are in sync at the same time. Which is really necessary. So the idea of reconciliations after the fact, it's not as necessary because the actual transaction is the reconciliation itself.
Excellent, thank you. And you say new ways. Another advantage of smart contracts is the ability to create new products that can work with the exchange of information, exchange of assets, exchange of funds in real time. And that creates an opportunity for financial services firms to experiment. That's the value also of the Microsoft platform, to provide a sandbox for firms to work privately for possible products that can be experimented internally, simplification internally, and then in consortiums, like Mark was mentioning. So another question for Mark, how hard is it to structure and program a smart contract?
So one of the beauties about Ethereum is that you don't need to be a deep cryptographer to actually get into the whole smart contract paradigm. With Bitcoin and some of the kind of legacy ideas using these unspent transaction outputs, you need to have really good cryptography skills to stack these cryptographic primitives to work in this narrow protocol. With Ethereum, if you know JavaScript, it might take you a couple of hours to get up to speed writing with smart contracts in the native code base called Solidity. So it's not super difficult to start writing, but when you start talking about enterprise solutions, there's a lot that goes into something to make it live and production ready. And one of the things I'd like to just reiterate that Microsoft's done that's really wonderful is they set up this sandbox environment wherein players can fail fast. It's not difficult to spin up your own blockchain. It's actually super easy. You could do one-click deployments on Microsoft's Azure using the Block Apps platform, which was created by Consensus. So it's a great way to kind of trial run, to build proof of concepts, to explore the space without having to spend a whole ton of money spinning up the infrastructure on your own.
Thank you, Mark. And you mentioned Azure. It's an enterprise-grade, scalable platform that is also an open platform. So the question to Mark is, how do you see the ecosystem of blockchain solution providers playing out in this platform?
It's a hard question. There's a lot of people who are getting involved in this space, right? I mean, I came from the Big Four. I came from Deloitte. We were one of the first to actively and aggressively enter the market. The rest of the Big Four are, you know, they're catching up. They're really getting involved. All the consulting firms have internal teams looking at this. All the major banks have a large group of people, especially in the United States, with things like R3. You're talking 42 banks all agreeing that this is important. We need to understand this. Let's invest money and do this together. So it's kind of difficult to say how it's all going to shake out, but I think everyone realizes that this is something that they need to focus on, and this isn't something that you can wait a couple of years to see how things work. It's something we need to do now and actually get involved in to figure out how we can optimize our business processes, build new products for our customers, experience exponential growth, and streamline things in a way that, you know, in the legacy system we were never able to do.
You mentioned R3, a consortium of banks, which is nowadays global with a strong focus in the US. But then we are here in Sao Paulo, Brazil. So the question to you, Mark, would be, are you already engaged with banks here in Brazil?
So that's part of my road trip here. We're talking to quite a few banks. It's all very exciting. There's good use cases that they've come up with internally. But part of what we're doing is helping them ideate and try to figure out what's the best thing. What are your current pain points that you want to fix? And how could a blockchain potentially help you go ahead and do that? So we're definitely engaging in the banks in Brazil, you know, in Asia, in the United States. Everyone has the same problems, essentially. You know, built on legacy systems, you realize that there's new paradigm in computing that, you know, we can now structure things in a different format, and it can really help everyone across the financial services industry.
Thanks. And yes, blockchain is disruptive. And here in Brazil, we in Microsoft also see enormous momentum with the banks who want to engage in innovation, in transformation, in changing the way they do business, and most importantly, making their operations more efficient. So Mark, that's fantastic. Tell me more about typical use cases that banks have.
Sure. So I think most of the banks have kind of come to the same conclusions about use cases. It's not really proprietary where one bank has this really specific use case that no one else has thought of. The use cases are kind of out there at the point, you know, payments and remittances, you know, they're obvious plays for blockchain. The idea of trade and settlements, I think, is going to be a lot more difficult than people imagine. You really need to nail identity down for any of these solutions. You need to know who the actors are in the space. You need to build, you know, have reputation systems, registries, token issuance and management. It gets complicated. It's really more of building all these component parts. How do you fit them together to create something truly with exponential value? So I'm actually really interested on the KYC side, like know your customer, ensuring that you can build a good digital identity that can't be faked, using cryptography to prove who you are at any given time. So I know Consensus has built something out, Uport, by Dr. Christian Lundquist. He's the leader in that. And we basically use Uport as an identity platform for any of our projects for financial institutions. So I guess that's the use case I'm most interested in now. How do you get identity nailed down in this new blockchain paradigm?
Interesting you mentioned identity and also know your customer, KYC, because regulatory compliance is a must for banks. And the blockchain architecture lends itself with a distributed ledger and triple entry accounting to provide better records for regulatory compliance. Mm-hmm. So the use cases should facilitate compliance. The space is getting particularly challenged when it comes to consumer finance or payments, corporate and consumer payments. But regulation will definitely catch up and find a way to tap the strengths of the blockchain architecture to facilitate compliance.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned triple entry accounting. It's funny, Dr. Christian Lundquist also pioneered this idea of balance. It's a triple entry accounting system wherein transactions on either side then get, you know, included in the blockchain so that there is a pointer between a blockchain transaction and each party's books and records. So looking at it from someone who came from an audit firm, you know, Deloitte does audit globally. I've worked in audit on private equity clients. And the idea of all these types of testing you have to do in this legacy system seems almost unnecessary if all the support you need is actually pointed to on this triple entry kind of ledger. Another thing with the regulators that I know it's still slow and they're learning and trying to understand this more, but if you give a view for the regulators to actually look at transactions happening in real time, it makes fraud insanely more difficult because fraud would have to be committed again in real time. Once something enters the blockchain, it's irrepudiable. You're not gonna be able to take it out. You have a true audit trail of everything that's happened historically and can go all the way back to the Genesis block. So it's a really neat idea. I think regulators are gonna catch on. We see it happening in the United States. You know, I've talked to Consensus, actively talking to the DTCC. We've talked to a few other bodies, you know, to figure out how can we regulate this. We had James Slazes of Consensus and our capital markets group talk at the CFTC meeting about a month ago down in Washington, D.C. And this is on all their minds also. They know that this is something that, you know, they truly need to grasp. They have to understand changes coming in this space. And what does it mean from the regulatory side? I actually think it's going to ease their job quite a bit.
Thank you. So regulatory engagement is going to bring more transparency and credibility to the system. It's still an ongoing process. For the time being, it's good for institutions, financial services institutions, to engage and experiment and develop the procedures, the processes with the regulators to facilitate compliance and the credibility in the overall system. How do you see the volumes, Mark, growing as the banks get hold of the blockchain technology? Yeah.
So volume's an important question. The idea of throughput, how much can a blockchain actually handle? It's a problematic question for a lot of reasons. You look at something like Bitcoin, which, you know, started all this, it could do about 3.5 to 7 transactions per second. That's not going to really solve much in this world of, you know, finance and high frequency trading and transactions and all the equity settlements. So I actually don't think a public blockchain, the way it's structured now, can handle what's going on in the finance world. But private implementations where you can reduce the consensus formation algorithm, where you can tweak some of the parameters, you can get much higher throughput. I know our block app system and Kieran James Lubin had mentioned that you can essentially build something where you scale linearly to handle whatever throughput's needed. So you can change blockchain solutions based upon what's needed. You have to weigh in, you know, should it be private? Should it be consortium based? Should it be a public solution? But most of the, you know, the early proof of concept work we're doing with clients is mainly in that private sandbox environment.
So proof of concept, sandbox, private environments, that's a way to get started. And then consortiums to take advantage of the third party and settlement capabilities of the blockchain. Would you agree, Mark?
Yeah, I think it starts private. And then you can expand on and bring some of your relationship partners in or people who are in the ecosystem. It's nice, the idea that you can all have the same shared viewpoint of what's the truth in the world. You have a record of all the transactions that happen, and you and all your counterparties are in agreement at all times. And using a system like Ethereum, you could be in sync in a private or consortium, you know, real-time blockchain, you know, with few second block times, maybe even sub 1 second block times. It's a crazy new world to think about how computing and this new paradigm of blockchain is going to reduce settlement time, increase auditability, get rid of any kind of, you know, fraud that would have to happen, you know, after the fact. And you're also just basically creating something wherein all the players see the same thing at the same time and they agree on what's truth. The idea of reconciliations and having a back office to figure out what trade breaks happen, that's going to go away.
So innovation and creativity, that's the opportunity for the banks to get ahead and avoid the disruption that fintech companies, startups are bringing to bear. So they need to be part of the innovation. That's where Microsoft is helping. And Mark mentioned also the creativity of the blockchain platform, coupled with the services that the cloud is offering, for example, advanced analytics on the cloud, give banks the opportunity to add new value to those new products and have much better information, predictive information that will bring value to the financial services system to the point of avoiding the disruption. What would you say, Mark, about other services that can be built on top blockchain applications.
So it gets to the idea of, you ask, where do you currently use a database? Every single company has a database on their back end. Really what a blockchain is, it's just a new type of database that has different rules and different capabilities. So I'm not going to limit it and just say it's just for this specific use case here or there. It's really across the board. And what's interesting, it's not just the idea of improving existing products. You can create entirely new ways of transacting and doing things. We built a total return swap wherein you could have real-time rebalancing of collateral. It's something that's unheard of in the legacy system, that every few seconds, based upon reputational risks from that given counterparty, they might have to post more collateral or it could be decreased. It's a really interesting world. So I'm not totally sure where it's all going to go. I do know that pretty much every bank I've talked to has a team working on it, trying to figure out how this could help them. There's very obvious use cases we talked about with either payments or KYC, you know, figuring out how we want to, you know, build remittances or cross-border. There's lots of different things, but I really think the idea of just dematerializing legacy products and building them into tokens so that they can now transact cross borders, internally, externally, have interoperability between firms, I think you're going to unlock a tremendous amount of value just in that new kind of way of transacting between two different counterparties.
Wow. Real-time rebalancing of collateral, that seems to redefine the risk management spectrum. Because now you are talking also about cross-border. Hopefully the regulators will help this happen, because it will bring enormous benefit from the system to the financial system in the form of reducing systemic risk and in the form of allowing financial services institutions to manage risk more dynamically, and also open it up to enterprises and the public to get more efficiency in the financial system.
Yeah, so I think that's an important point that the regulators need to be kept in mind. Whoever's building these solutions, you can't build it, you know, on your own, just in a back room, just saying, here's the code, I figured it all out. Every step of the way, we're bringing regulators involved. We're having conversations with all the parties so that we don't build a solution that works for just one person. We build a solution that works for the ecosystem. I think that's important going forward.
Now that you mentioned the code, that brings up the question of certification. You know, testing and certifying code to go into production is essential for financial services firms. So how does the certification of code work in a decentralized architecture, Mark?
That's a great question. We're building lots of decentralized applications that aren't necessarily specific for a bank or a financial institution, but really they're just going to be released onto the public Ethereum network. And one of the problems, not really problems, but one of the things you have to be cognizant of is that once you write the code and deploy it, it exists. It's out there in the wild and there's no changing it. You can't go back in time and update, you know, what was written, the code that was deployed to the blockchain. You could always redeploy new code, but it's much more efficient that you do proper security audits, that you ensure everything is processing the way it does. We have test nets where we run everything. Currently, we have multiple projects that are in the security audit modes, so that once they are released, they function the way they're supposed to.
So the audits don't go away. They become more effective, more efficient, and more timely. So thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.